I'd like to welcome Head Chef Jeremy Bentley of the Devonshire and Surrey Hills to my series of informal chats. First, Jeremy, could we go back to the beginning of your career, and can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I'm an Adelaide boy, from Adelaide, so I started cooking once I finished school, started working in an Indian restaurant, first up, tandoori oven, then moved to other kitchens. Where did I go? The Oxford Dining Room under Todd Langley, so I worked there, and that was probably the high end of Adelaide cooking at the time. Then went off to Port Douglas and worked up there for a bit, and then headed to England. Worked in Bristol for 2.5 years at the River Station, and then to London for 4 years at the Square.
Where did the misconception come that you actually are a Brit? Would that like to rest here?
Yeah, I don't know. I was there for so long, I suppose, that, you know, 8 years almost in the end. My wife's English. I'm from Adelaide, so I speak. I don't go, how are you going, mate? We all speak a bit posher down in Adelaide, so I don't know. I mean, maybe from Matt Kemp being, you know, working at Balzac and that sort of thing.
I know it's on the plate. It does look a bit mod-Brit, your food.
Yeah, a little bit. Definitely the influences there. But you know, that was the 4 years that I had at the Square was that. That's the reason for that. That, you know, I lived and ate British sort of food. So
can we talk a little bit about your time spent at the Square? Because I sense that was pretty fundamental to who you are as a chef today.
Yeah, that was the best thing I ever did. Was going to Square and working on the fill. As I said, it's sort of like your master's in cooking. You know, you get there, and it's Square also is a kitchen which not many apprentices and that sort of thing. There's definitely commies. You are a commie when you start there, but it's an older brigade. So all of us were older chefs. We'd worked 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years somewhere, and then we were all 26, 27, 28, and working in that kitchen. So that was sort of, you make the next step to go and do your master's in cooking and under someone like Phil.
And you progressed to sous chef at Square?
Yep, after 2 years. So I sort of was, I mean, you start at the bottom and then you work your way up. So I did every section pretty quickly. And then from there, became a sous chef after 2 years.
Can you tell us a little bit about the pressure of working in a Michelin kitchen? Because there would have to be some associated with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's everything is... you know, there's no room for error. Everything has to be consistency, which is any kitchen, as we try and do here, and as you do everywhere. You know, everything has to be perfect in the kitchen to go out consistent anyway, but it's that even higher level in a two-star Michelin where everything is checked, you know, down to the last detail. You've got, you know, 4 or 5 sous chefs or you know, junior sous chefs and then 3 sous chefs and, you know, head chefs. So it's all down to pecking order of everything absolutely perfect going out.
What was the size of the brigade at... at the Square?
So there's about 30 chefs, so I think at a time you had 22 odd in the kitchen.
And so, how many covers would you be doing for the...
So the covers were big, 100, you know, up to 100 for lunch and around 100 for dinner, and that's most days, you know, always for lunch, always for dinner 100, but, you know, 80 to 100 covers, so that was pretty big for a Michelin star restaurant. Most two-star Michelins don't do that sort of covers at all, you know, they're doing 45 to 50 or... that sort of thing to keep that level, so it's pretty good, you know, it's pretty amazing to have that many people coming in the restaurant and sending that sort of food.
It is, especially those standards that you've got to put out. Can you tell us a little bit about just Phil himself and his philosophy on food?
Yeah, Phil's, I mean, he's a great guy. He's very easygoing. I mean, he when push comes to shove, he's in your face and he wants it perfect, but he's not a screamer. He'll help you, he'll show you. You know, he's a nurturer more than a... He had Rob Weston, who I worked with for 10... Well, he's been there. He was there for 12 years, whatever, in the end. He was the man that did all the screaming and all the yelling. Phil sort of, you know... He has his people do that, but he nurtures and he's always in there... Phil's one that's in there cooking the whole time. So it's not as if he comes in screaming and saying whatever. He's showing you, you know. He's in there doing it. Yeah, absolutely. And then he's rolling past there. He's, you know... peeling langoustines, opening scallops, all that sort of stuff he's doing. He does every job. Mm-hmm. So that's not, you know, he's not someone that comes in for service and then leaves and then expects it to be.
So that is a bit of a change almost from some of those London kitchens were battlegrounds.
Yeah, it definitely was a battleground. So, I mean, you had to, you know, when push comes to shove, it was, you know, it was a full-on kitchen. It wasn't, you know, a lot of blokes worked for 1 year and that was it. They got their bit of paper saying, "There we go. I worked at the Square for a year. Might have only done 2 sections, but they, you know, only went in there like, no, I'm out of there." So, I mean, it definitely was it is that old school. I don't think you get it in Australia as much. And I think the reason for that is that we don't have as many staff. There's someone knocking on the door every day to work at the square, so it didn't matter. So you could churn through your staff and you could really push them to the end degree. You can't do that here because nobody wants to work in the kitchen in Australia.
Different philosophy, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sydney Dining's gone from a transition recently from moving away more from fine dining to more casual to a more sustainable model. You've struck the right balance, in my opinion. Can you tell us how have you achieved that? Because it's difficult. Some have tried and failed, and some really good restaurants we've lost in that transition.
Yeah. When we opened in our first review, Good Living review, and the words that ring forever was, are we going against the tide of Sydney dining? When you had places like the Carrington and Sliders and all this sort of share food and whatever, are they going against the tide of Sydney dining? And we're not doing sriracha sauce, we're not doing Mr. G's open. And they're all great restaurants, but we're going to do a la carte and degustation. So, I think with that, I think we're obviously getting busier and busier as we go. But I think people have got bored of the sharing. Here you get your own plate of food. If you do the degustation or you do the a la carte, your own plate of food sitting in front of you. So you don't have to share. You don't have to go, here you are. Who's going to take the last prawn off the table? Who's going to take the last whatever? So I think for me, I think people come back to us because we offer that thing. If you sit down with your own plate of food, a finished plate of food, and you don't have to share it with anyone. So that's sort of,
So in many ways, you almost were pioneering that in the transition phase, weren't you?
But I think restaurants like this, and I suppose getting back to that brief thing, they stand the test of time. I think, it's great service, great food. It's not a trend. I think it is what it is. It's a small neighbourhood fine dining restaurant.
I noticed that in that transition, a lot of restaurants have not maintained their standards. I'm looking, we're just sitting here at a table now, we've got tablecloths, glasses are impeccably shined, cutlery shined, but some places just, did we throw out the baby with the bathwater to a degree in trying to do that?
Yeah, mate, I suppose we can only speak for what we do here. Ours has been, from the beginning to now, it's amazing what a different level we're at as well, being able to, and I think me as a chef owner, being here all the time, I have some nights off or whatever, but I'm here most every service you'll see me here. So our standards, whatever, we've got a great restaurant manager, so he's doing the floor and we work together as a team. So I think, the standards and the for us is just progression, progression from when we started to now.
Has it been a battle winning over the locals? Because the first night I came here, I could tell a lot of them were return visitors.
Yeah. Well, in the beginning, we tried to do no BYO. We do BYO now, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I mean, our wine list has always been really, really... It's value for money. I mean, you can get $45 for a great bottle of wine. So it was just winning them over the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. The weekends were always busy, but it was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday that we didn't... we had to build on. Got the Belvoir Theatre, so we do a $48 pre-theatre with them. And the locals definitely love it and come back.
I notice also on Tuesdays you offer a no corkage.
No corkage, yeah, which is great, and that really fills up. People come bring their wine, whatever. And we find people tend to do the degustation rather than a la carte those nights. They can bring their own wine, so it's in their head. Oh, I don't have to pay for the wine. They're going for the degustation. They match their own, and we still same service. Whether you bring your own bottle or have our sort of bottle. And there's no BYO Friday and Saturday, but you're offering to that during the week.
As the Devonshire's evolved, could you take us through just a couple of the changes that have happened since you've started?
I don't think it's such a massive change that we've implemented, like saying, okay, we're going to go this way or whatever. I think it's just what, having a great team out in front. I mean, the restaurant manager now is fantastic. I think in the beginning it works better now with the guys we've got in the kitchen, the boys. There's more systems in place that we can build on. So the service, the running of the service, the way we cook in the kitchen, all that sort of things. Which in the beginning, coming from a big kitchen to a brigade with three chefs in there, what can we do within our kitchen, sort of thing.
If you were talking to a diner for the first time that was coming to the Devonshire, what could you tell them? What experience could they expect from your perspective?
Coming first, they're going to get great food, great service, and in a relaxed and friendly environment. I think the I think in the beginning also a lot of the tablecloths put a lot of people off, thinking that we were a snooty fine diner. It definitely isn't. I mean, it's, you know, the noise in here on a busy night you've been in here, it's fun, you know. It's not stuffy at all.
I think that's what struck me the first night I came, that, I mean, I saw standards being maintained, but at no point was it ever stuffy.
No,
or was the service aloof? And I mean, to me, that's where that balance was struck just perfectly.
And these boys get into it. I mean, they know if we do loads of tastings, they eat the food, they know what's on it, you know. They know it as much as if, you know, I'm sending food in the past and I've forgotten someone, or you've forgotten that, you whatever. They love it and they live it, you know, so that they love what we're doing, they believe in what we're doing. And you know, we all have a good time, we have a laugh, but we work hard at the same thing, at the same time.
It's a good philosophy.
Yeah.
I have to ask you about the Devonshire tea dessert that I had for the first time when I was here. It looks deceptively simple, but it's a... I know it's not, but it's a brilliant dessert, an absolute showstopper. Can you take us right back to how that's done?
Well, it's, that's from my wife.
Really? Wow. Okay.
But she said, well, that's the thing, you've got to do something with the name, you've got to do something with the name. And she came out and said, do a Devonshire tea, something with Devonshire tea. So we had a look at what was in the Devonshire tea. And it just came from there. So we've used loads of different teas in the beginning, and it's the same recipe. I mean, it's a great, and you love the consistency of it.
It was magnificent,
and that's the thing. But you try and cook it. I think it comes from the actual teacup that we're cooking it in, and the oven we're in. The insulation of it just does it's just such a beautiful texture, you know. And you do it in something, you do the same recipe in another, in a ramekin or whatever. It's not the same. So you know, it's sort of that sort of thing. So the tea we're using the tea too. So we've got berry and Earl Grey at the moment, so it's a raspberry rush, it's called. But it just works.
But when I had that too, the sense memory of just having that took me back to Devonshire tea.
Yeah, and
just
with the scone, and we make the scones, and it's my mum's recipe for the scones. Infuse the ice cream, scone crumble on top, cherry jam, and that's all you need. I mean, and people love it.
And you serve it with a little bit of ceremony just to...
A little bit, yeah, absolutely.
The pass of the Devonshire is quite open, so we can see what's going on in there.
Yeah.
What I sense was a very tight-knit brigade that had earned your respect. Can you tell us how that's achieved and what your expectations are of your brigade?
Yeah, definitely. I respect them and they respect me. And I think that the thing in the beginning, they have to respect me first. You know, not in as in I have to earn their respect. But I do that by being in there and not asking them to do anything that I wouldn't do. Now, that goes back to Phil Howard as well. You know, I do every section. I help them out with whatever they need to do. They only get berated if they're making a mistake. Yeah, exactly. So they're going to get help from me first, and they're going to learn, and they're going to be here willing to learn. I think that's what they want to do. They can have any recipe that they've done, that they make. You know, it's open to them. I'm not going to show you that. I'm not going to do whatever. And know that if they get to a certain level, you know, they want to make the pass, they want to make whatever. Okay, if you're good at that, then you're going to go on to doing that. So it's sort of, we all work together. They're two really, really good, really good guys. They're in there, you know, before me every morning.
Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, Mike, I got one English guy, one Aussie, and they're both at the same level in there, so which is great. So it's me then those two, so there's no sous chef, whatever. They both are sous chefs. Mike's he worked with Justin at Bacass. He went to London and worked at Hibiscus, so he's straight back from Hibiscus and working here, so he's got that same London sort of attitude towards cooking. And Jack is an English guy. He worked at Hospital Row with Ramsay, and then he worked at another restaurant, Medlar, which is a one star in King Street in Chelsea, and that is from an old square maitre d'. He opened Medlar, so he's Jack came from there. So yeah, two well trained boys as well.
And how many do you run on the floor at the night? Like tonight, it's a business.
Yeah, tonight we'll have four. So we have three. We have Craig, Craig's a restaurant manager. We have Guy Collins, who's the sommelier. We have another guy, Jeremy, who works most nights. There's only three of them most nights. Then we have a girl behind the bar on Friday and Saturday. So normally it's only three on the floor, and then tonight it'll only be three on the floor. Then you'll have someone in the bar to help them and carry food. So it's four.
Just what you're talking about at the square. The night I was here, there wasn't a lot of noise or angst in the kitchen, but the same token, very focused.
Yeah. There's no screaming, and that, I think, you know, there was plenty of screaming at the square and that sort of antics. But when there's only two other guys, and it sort of loses its power to turn around and call someone, whatever. It's sort of, you know, they know when the push comes to shove, you get, you know, a few few nasty words, but there's no point in screaming. Plus, everyone can hear us out here anyway.
Exactly.
You know, and that's the thing. It's not, screaming for the sake of screaming, calling someone effing whatever. There's no point. You know, I don't think anyway. Whether you're in a big kitchen or not, it doesn't. You're going to get the best out of them by helping them do it, but you know, not being that nice.
We are moving quite that a little bit.
Can we just, I talked about your style earlier on, I just sort of saw a little bit mod written it. How would you describe it yourself?
Yeah, I don't see the British side of it. I suppose I use whatever produce, you know, the definitely French technique,
yep.
And that's what it goes back to. Everything is that sort of technique. You know, we do a little bit of sous vide cooking. It's not ultra modern, but, you know, we use a lot of textures, a lot of crunches, a lot of stuff like that. So it's sort of, it wants to be exciting to eat. And, you know, you don't want to be bored. So a lot of different stuff on the one plate. Like tonight you have we've got assiette of pig coming in. So we've got pig jowl, we've got pig shoulder, we've got port loin. You know, so all those sort of things. Lots of different ingredients on the one plate. I don't know if it's modern British. I suppose just contemporary cooking. Mm-hmm. You know?
It is one restaurant where actually you can smell the aromatics of things being cooked, and as the dishes go by, which is always refreshing.
Yeah.
Sometimes you go into sterile restaurants and there's just no aromas. There's nothing can excite you from your senses.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, it's nice and small, so they definitely smells coming out of the kitchen. So it's good. But it's a room that works. You know, it's 42 seats, but it's cozy, and everyone comments when they come that how cozy. How nice it is to sit in here, and you know, it's not too big. You're all sort of together in the one little space.
From my perspective, you're not a chef that actively seeks the limelight. Diners could expect to see you here in the majority of services, which you told us about earlier. Can you tell us? I mean, that for me, that work ethic's particularly refreshing. Can you tell us what being a chef means to you? If you stripped it right back to the core of being a chef.
I think you just need to love it. I mean, I love cooking and love eating good food. You know, I think it's a mistaken profession if the limelight of a chef. What about it? A chef's life. It's hard work. You know, and if you didn't enjoy it while you were here, then it's pointless. You know, you're doing 14, 15, 16 hour days. You know, you need to love it. So I think being a chef is being that loving what you do. You know, it's a vocation more than a job. I mean, it's great to have a. And as I said to the boys in the kitchen, I said, learning to cook is only the first thing. You know, if you want to open a restaurant or you want to do whatever, then you've got to learn that side as well. So, you know, and getting every year, having, you know, to keep the award on the wall, to keep people like you writing about you, you've got to keep inventing yourself and going. So you just need to, you know, it's a journey more than anything.
And I think a lot of the young chefs too don't get exposed to the business side too much, and it is a very hard industry to make a dollar in.
Yeah, absolutely. God, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it is. That's it. I don't have a Ferrari parked out the front, but you know, we're on our way there. Hopefully, and they don't. And that's the hard thing too. I mean, these boys sort of know a little bit. We work on percentages in the kitchen, and they know what we spend each week, and it's all written down. This we have a look and go, no, we can't. You know, where are we at for this week? You know, round it in, let's go. So they get a little bit, but not much. So that's the thing. Once you, and that, for me too, opening this place, I knew how to run a kitchen. I didn't know how to run the front of house or run, you know, wine, all that sort of stuff, which I've sort of taught myself along the way.
So you become quite rounded in that.
Yeah, respect.
Recently did a pop-up at Armidale with Darren Templeman and Adam. Darren's actually coming from Indon, and he's looking forward
to it.
They particularly spend a lot of time encouraging the young local chefs, and they went to pains to spend time with the young kids, and almost in a mentoring, like a role, a legacy role. And how important is that for you to work with young chefs and pass on the skills that you've accumulated over the years?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have to. That's the thing. That's the same as I said earlier, like teaching them, everyone doing the same thing in the kitchen, or letting them learn everything. My recipes are their recipes if they're going to cook them. So that, you know. We have to nurture young talent and you know, and let them, that's our future of the industry, you know, obviously. And it's hard because it's not the easiest industry in the world. I don't think there's a lot of young people really coming through to do it. So I mean it's very important.
Adam Moore was saying to me, he said he was concerned that with a lot of the young chefs, the fundamentals aren't being taught to them. And he had no problem with them exploring their own directions, but
yeah.
he felt that the fundamentals were just so incredibly important to just start their career.
Yeah.
And so the chance to work with an experienced chef like yourself and Adam and Darren, I mean, that for a young person guiding that, it's quite a responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I suppose, that, I mean, all the... Yeah, I think they have to learn that. Just learn the basics first. Learn the French technique. Learn all the sort of, you know, how to braise something properly. How to do it before you make it into some whatever they want to make it into. Yeah, the modern cooking. I mean, you look at Gachapart. You know, he's from the school of all of us in the beginning before he's turned his food into amazing creations. You know.
So people tend to forget the classical background some of these chefs have had. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think that's the important thing. And it's what, you know, at TAFE, it's all the classical sort of stuff. You need to learn that and do that well first before you reinvent food.
I was saying it to Adam in an era of TV shows where it's almost encourages a bypass of TAFE and of those skills. You would encourage people to pursue a TAFE direction initially?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think all that stuff that, you know, learning how to butcher a whole animal. You know, a lot of chefs can't take a whole beast and put it into its portions and know what you can use it for. You know, that's very important. I think you learn that at TAFE more than anywhere.
Yeah, I was speaking to Paul Cooper just up the road about that last night, and he's particularly passionate about that as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sitting in the restaurant itself, and I mean the interior design is. Interior designer's done a fantastic job. Can you tell us what brief that you gave it? Because when I first came in here, I couldn't believe how many mirrors there are, but it works.
Yeah, absolutely. We're actually meant to get more and put them in. But yeah, she's a friend, Victoria Waters, so I knew Vic quite well anyway. So yeah, we just came and sat in here and sort of she threw some ideas around and you know, she knew my sort of food, so we just sort of went from there. And this is all, I mean... The left on it, that's all a sounding board.
Okay.
So that takes a sound, so that had to be there. So then we sort of came up with a bit of material on the side and did whatever. And the toilet, everyone comments on the toilet. Meant to be the best toilet in Sydney.
Honestly, it's amazing how many are so poorly maintained. And it's an extension of the room, whether people like to think about that or not.
Absolutely.
Know?
And it's only one toilet. There you go. So I think you've got to keep it nice. And...
We talked just briefly about wine service. So I thought the night I was here, it was particularly well done. That's obviously very important from your point as a restaurateur and diners. And can you tell us, was that something that just slowly emerged or something you've been working on to improve?
Yeah, I think, that's just progression too. We've got Guy and Craig both love their wines and love to match the wines with the food. So we sit down and taste all the foods before we you know, put something on the... So if I've got a new menu, we'll taste all the food first and then we'll match the wine to it, obviously, after we don't just try and put it all together. But, yeah, it's just... Guy's very passionate about his wine. The guy here that night, big fella.
Mm.
So, you know, and he loves to pass knowledge on and these guys all get a piece of that. So we'll sit down after serve. We've got some new wine on. Mm. We'll sit down on a Saturday night. Like tonight, we might have three or four bottles up there and we'll sit and he'll explain it to everyone just as dramatically as he does on the floor. And so we all get to learn and have that knowledge.
The front and back of house here seems very cohesive from what I saw. You know, sometimes that can be a problem with restaurants, but I didn't sense that when I was here that night.
Yeah, no, not at all. We're all mates. We're all on the common, you know, common page. So, we get along very well, and we're all here for the same reason, so it's good. No, we work very well together. And we have a little, you know, as I said, tonight we'll have a little drink after service, and we're all mates, and it's good.
You've worked very closely with Matthew Kemp. Can you tell us a bit about your relationship with Matthew over the years?
Yeah, Matt. Obviously, I came back from the square, and he was a square boy too. So we had that that commonality there.
Were you there at the same time?
No. He was there good 10 years before me. Yeah. So I didn't know him at all until I came back. Mm-hmm. Came back to Sydney. And I went for a job I just threw my CV around and it was Colin Fastenage gave me a ring and said, I've just hired someone. He goes, ring Kempy, he's about to open the Burlington. So I rang Matt and I chatted on the phone to Matt for about an hour just from the first go and I went and met him. And he said, look, I don't have a job for you, but I'll just make you a job. You know, so he made a junior sous chef role or whatever at Bell's at. So I was there for around about three months, and the head chef was leaving. I said, look, well, I'm happy to be head chef, but the progression of the kitchen was that the sous chef was going to take it over. And I said, well, that's fine, we'll shake hands and go. You know, I need to do something else. And he said, well, don't go, let's open a restaurant. So it took us 2 years to find one, and we did that. So, I mean, that was the, you know, he gave me that opportunity to open here together.
Is Matthew still actively involved in that?
No, and it was never that. From day one, anyway, he's never worked here, and was never going to work here. That wasn't the thing. It was just more that we were going to open it together. You know, use his name and do that sort of thing. So yeah, we still talk, and see, I'm going to lunch with him on Monday. Mm. So, but yeah, and he's great. You know, I can give him a ring, and he always, you know, helps out and whatever we need. But it was always going to be mine. But he just gave me the opportunity.
Was that when Balzac was in the original site when you worked there?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That would have been a good environment to learn in then, because in many ways it was almost there were lessons there for you here, weren't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and Balzac, definitely. For Kempe too, a lot of his cooking was secondary cuts and that sort of thing. I come straight out of using the primest of, you know, of ingredients, truffles and all that sort of stuff, and having the thing at the square, there's no food cost. You know, it doesn't matter. It isn't.
Extraordinary.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, they don't care. You know. Phil's turned around and bought, you know, 20,000 pounds worth of truffles. It's not, that's not the issue, you know. So, but with Kempe, it got back to working in the kitchen on a tight budget. So
Balzac would have been quite grounding compared to...
Absolutely, and probably what was needed before I, you know, came to do this here. Otherwise, well, I don't think it would be here if I had truffles and whatever on the menu.
Things often happen at the right time.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
How would you, I mean, you're there experienced and you've worked in Europe and Australia, and how would you describe the current state of the industry at the moment?
In Australia?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've got some of the best chefs in the world doing absolutely brilliant things. I think it's just the... If you look at almost every kitchen, all the chefs I know in Sydney, everyone's lacking in staff. No one's got, you know, trying to find young people coming through that are going to take over from us and do whatever. So I think the industry's in a great place. We're doing great food. You know, and as good as anywhere in the world, and you know, but it's just hard to get staff.
On that issue, how do you retain good staff when you get them? Because it'd always be the issue of other restaurants trying to poach them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's another thing too, and it's hard too, and it's very transient, because people will, you know, especially the junior guys, and they're going to be here 2 or 3 years. I mean, and then they're going to go because they're here to learn. They're learning and whatever. How do you keep them? I don't know if you got the answer to that. You can tell me.
So what do you think's caused the shortage? Just
I don't know. I already don't know. I think that maybe there's always been a shortage in Australia anyway, of really, really, you know, of enough people coming through, population, you know. There's not that many people here. So, I know, and MasterChef and all that sort of help, I think it definitely helps. But once they get in there and see that it's not like MasterChef, it's hard graft.
It was rather.
Then it's,
I know what you're saying. Just that recently at Armidale Pop-Up, I actually worked a service for the first time, and I've got a greater respect after having done that. It is hard work, and I mean, there's so many things you have to keep an eye on, and it's just not all just glossy sort of television.
No, absolutely not. And that's it. And it's not. I think it's, you know, it's one of it's obviously one of the hardest industries in the world, you know, to work in, and it's high pressure.
Looking back in your career, could you pinpoint a moment or a series of moments that made you proud to be a chef, that you look back and you just knew that this is what you wanted to do? Then was there something that said, okay, this is sort of almost justified it to me?
I think it happens every day almost. I get when 6 o'clock comes around, I get butterflies in my stomach. I get nervous for service. I always do, you know, but not in the old ways, when you're an apprentice, nervous that you're going to get caned or not, but nervous just, okay, here we go, let's do it. So when you're sending out great food and you're at the pass and you've finished a great service and you know you've been right in the weeds, but you pull yourself out and just sent great food, that's every day, and that's what you get. So I don't think there was a moment when I went, okay, that's, I think it happens all the time.
So I think with the dining public being, looking at these shows, I think there is a slight perception that at the ultra professional level that service goes incredibly smoothly, and there's some moment when it doesn't, and it's that those skills that you can bring yourself out of that define you as a professional.
Absolutely, and that's the thing, and it doesn't matter, and you know, you look tonight, we've got a full restaurant tonight, and on the book it looks great because it's, you know, there's that many, you know, five tables at 7, there's next one's at 7:30, the next one's at 8, the next one's at 9, you know, whatever. So it looks brilliant. Well, that's not going to happen tonight. Everyone's going to come whenever they want to come. You know, it doesn't matter. And then all of a sudden we've got 30 covers that we need to do in an hour. And we only have, you know, 40, you know, 50, it's going to be 50 covers tonight. That's our maximum, is around 50 covers. So you can do 30 in about an hour. Yeah. But you never know, tonight might be perfect. Are you going to come on time tonight?
I am. I'm certainly going to attempt to have the others turn up on time. When you do get in the weeds a bit, what do you rely back on to get you out of it?
Yeah, just, you know, just being out of work and, you know, multitasking, all everything you ever learn. It's just, you know, it just back, you back yourself and go for it. I think you just go into experience takes over and off you go, you know. And that's it. And that's what the boys see in there, when you can do it, not just screaming at someone, you know. You make it happen.
And maintaining those standards within that pressure moment would be absolutely true.
And with the front of house too, and having that communication with Craig and just saying, you know, look, it's going to be 15 minutes, let them know, what can we do? We give them a glass of wine, we do whatever, because it's not going to go out until it's perfect. So that's fine. It's having that, you know, him at the past saying, okay, what's going on, that constant communication. And then, you know, people are going to wait sometimes, but as long as they know they're going to wait, I think, you know, if you're a decent enough, I mean, some people are going to get the shits, but they're going to get the shits anyway. What can you do? Most of the time, people are, as long as you communicate to them what's happened or whatever, then people are fine.
I'd like to thank you, Jeremy, for having a chat. I mean, it's a busy prep going on, as I can see from here, and I know you're keen to get back in with the boys. And I'd like to thank you for the meal I had here recently. And it's meals and restaurants like this that make me passionate about writing about food. And It's refreshing to know that the standards are being maintained somewhere, and that people still believe in the fundamentals of those standards, and that that providing an all-round service is important. And so thank you for bringing a restaurant of this calibre to Sydney.
No worries at all.
Thank
My
you.
Pleasure.
Cheers.
Thanks.
Thank you, mate.